Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Believe it or not, it's time to talk about car repair, and you're more than welcome to join us anytime you want, and that is now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you give us a call, there's two of us here to help you out. We'll do the very best we can and give you all the information we can give you. And part of what we do is we talk about, tell us about the year, make, and model, and let's talk about the symptoms. The word Google should not appear in our conversation. and that's because we get to be the Google. We're going to be the ones that are actually get to talk about the Google stuff. So, but what we have to the table, what we bring to the table is quite different than what they do. Because, Billy, you have how many years of experience with greasy fingernails?
Oh, 45 maybe. I lost track.
And I'm slightly more than that. So the idea is that we've been around, and I think we both broke our we both started with the 50s cars and 60s cars.
Well, I graduated high school in 76, so maybe 60s cars.
Okay, 60s cars. Yeah. We still worked on the 50s because they were still around. It wasn't the predominant car on the market. But it, when I started in 1968, we weren't working on 68 cars.
Right.
Because they were new. Yeah. And so
my first job out of trade school was at a Lincoln Mercury dealer.
Okay.
I was doing brand new Lincolns and Mercurys. So I didn't see the 50s.
And I can see that.
I saw the 70s and 80s.
You know, I was pumping gas, and the big joke was, where do you put gas in a 57 Chevy? Do you remember
behind
that?
The left taillight?
Ah, that's pretty good.
I remember that.
That's pretty
good. I'm a car guy.
And then there's other cars that
had. And I did pump gas.
There were other guys there, or other cars there that had hidden ones. Do you remember any of those? The 57 was obviously the one
that's probably the coolest.
Yes, yes.
One of my own cars, there's in the tail panel of my 61 Galaxy is a little flip down door where the fuel is. It's not as hidden as some cars. Like I've had cars that was hidden behind the license plate.
Yes,
it was a little spring, and it would not as cool as the taillight though.
No, you're right.
Chevy gets it.
So you've got almost 100 years of experience sitting here between the two of us. Bill owns 25th Street Auto. He's at Indian School and 25th Street. He's been on our list of best car repair shops for years and years and years and years and years, long before either one of us, our hair turned silver. And when did you start dyeing your hair silver?
No, I just started shaving it off so you can't tell it's white.
Oh, that's what it is. That's what it is. I understand. Nevertheless, there's a lot of other guys on our, so to speak, group. And one of them is Kurt's Auto Repair up at I-17 and Bell Road. Kurt's been around a very long time. He's real honest. He's dependable. And he's not one of those spring chickens. He's like Bill and I. We've been around a long time. And we started in the cars with points and condensers. And we go from points to condensers to electronic ignition. Then we went to carburetors with electronic controls and then to fuel injection. And then we got to 8-speed, 7, 8, 9, 10-speed transmissions. And now we have cars that are so smart that we have a tough time matching wits with them. But it's important to know that it's just really a matter of voltage. One means something and five means something and everything in between means something. And as long as we can interpret that number, we're fine.
Yep. Tearing it down to the lowest common denominator, that is right.
Yeah. It's just it's a voltage language we live in.
Yep.
It's a voltage language. So numbers tell us everything.
Everything.
There was an issue not too long ago with a car that had a catalytic converter. And after three catalytic converters, the problem still wasn't solved. So according to the shop that ultimately fixed it, it was a Ford. It had a PCV valve hose with a split in it. It was running lean, and it had codes, a CAT code.
Well, and garbage in, garbage out.
My point is it's the Google mentality. If it has a CAT code,
let's replace the CAT.
So here's my next question. 25th Street Auto, when you have a CAT code, an O2 sensor code on the CAT, how many times is it the CAT and how many times is it something else approximately?
Some people misunderstand an upstream sensor from a catalyst monitor sensor.
Okay.
But usually if we get a code that is a catalyst monitor sensor, we tell people we're not going to sell you an expensive catalyst because we're going to do some tests. But I would say more often than not, it is the catalytic converter.
Okay.
Although, you know,
On the upstream or downstream?
Based on a downstream sensor thing. Based on an upstream sensor, I never even put a catalytic converter on my list of suspects.
Okay, okay. Now,
I'm looking up further than the upstream sensor,
but
that vacuum hose.
No, you're right. you're absolutely right. They're going to have a tough time with the upstream and downstream, and we're talking about there's a sensor where the exhaust comes into the catalytic converter, and so that sensor really gives us a quick picture of what's coming out of the engine. Mm-hmm. Then on the back side of the catalytic converter, and the catalytic converter is a giant grill. Okay, that's what it is. It's just the same thing that you grill your steaks on. It's just this big can with a big fire inside of it, and as the gasoline comes out of the engine, it isn't burned, it's burned in the catalytic converter, so there's a sensor on the front end and on the back end. And so Bill's talking about the front end sensor. It's not going to be a cat because we're seeing what's coming into the cat. Something's wrong in front of the cat, which is the engine compartment. On the back side of the catalytic converter, we expect to see a number that says to us, I have consumed all the hydrocarbons that came into my mouth. But that sensor can tell us, and I agree, then the back end, the outflow, the exit of the catalytic converter almost always means there's a problem with the cat. But it could also be it's being flooded on the front side.
Right, and that comes down to if this was a $30 part to replace, we'd just go ahead and replace it based on that code. Mm-hmm. But since it's an expensive thing, it's kind of like my car won't start, it must need a starter. Mm-hmm. No, let's make sure before we spend hundreds of dollars on a starter that it's not a loose battery cable. So very similar with the converter.
Perfect. Perfect analogy. It's exactly what our lives are all about.
Yeah.
I've put three alternators on it, and it still won't charge. Well, why don't we take that shoestring belt off and put a real belt on it? You know?
Yes. And I have chest pain. It must be time for a heart transplant.
Yes. You know? We're jumping a big way. and it's okay because there's lots of people that like to work on their own cars. The problem with working on their own cars is when you come in and tell us to replace the catalytic converter, we're not going to pay for your mistake. So when you bring it in and we put a $1,200 cat on it, an $800 cat on it, a $4,000 cat on it, and it still has the same code when it's done, it's not our problem. But if you would just simply share the story with our group, share the story with your garage, more than likely they're going to say, it's going to cost you $100 to $200 to diagnose this, and then we'll be able to tell you exactly what the problem is. And most of us are going to a range now just because people want a number, and we can't give you a number on how long it's going to take us to dig this ditch. How long is it going to take us to find the hole in the tire? How long is it going to take us blah, blah, blah.
There's an urban myth that there's a black box that you punch into plug into a car, and it tells you what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, that's not the case. There are devices that plug in, and you get codes, but the codes, unless you're trying to sell parts at the parts store, the codes don't mean replace parts. The codes tell us what page in the auto repair manual to open up and begin checking things so that we can come to a real conclusion.
It tells us that this sensor sees a problem, but mm-hmm. we don't know what the problem is.
Yep.
The sensor is screaming, lean, 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 but we don't know why. Not too long ago, it's a great example. How many times have you fixed a lean code that comes in with all kinds of new mass airflow sensors and everything that has to do with a lean code?
Right.
And in this particular case, the fuel filter is like 99% plugged.
Yeah, we call it lean because we understand the low voltage, high voltage thing. Yeah. But what it really is saying is too much oxygen in the exhaust.
Right.
Okay, why? Is there oxygen leaking into the exhaust? Is mm-hmm. there not enough fuel because the fuel filter's plugged? You know,
exactly.
There's just so many causes, and that's what we're there for. We're there to find which of them as diagnosticians.
I remember distinctly one guy saying to me, just button my car up, I'm going to pick it up. And I said, okay, and that was exactly the conversation. We have a lean code, and the fuel filter's plugged up. Unfortunately, that just flies in the face, and I'm paraphrasing, that flies in the face of what the parts the guy at the parts store says and stuff like that. And okay, fine, then that's fine. Yeah. Certainly you should go back and he's going to sell you all the injectors and the mass airflow sensor and the bellows that goes between the mass airflow sensor and the mouth of the engine. And he's going to have you replace the intake manifold and the PCV valve and everything else that can possibly leak. Oh, and don't forget the fuel pressure regulator because there is a vacuum line there too.
Yep. So let's get sensors.
That. Yep. Yeah, all the sensors. Let's do all the sensors. And then when you come back, the fuel filter installed is $88. So give me a call. But you're still going to pay the diagnostic because it took us a while to figure out that fuel flow was substantial. And that had to be driven. So we have to plug in information. But the black box has to be interpreted. So it's not something that the black box goes, oh, Mark, the fuel filter's plugged. That's not the case. I'm looking at the numbers, and the numbers are telling me that I've got some really low numbers that I want to be higher. So on a 1 to 10 scale, I want to see a 5. I want to see a 4, 5, or 6, mm-hmm. but I'm seeing 1 and 2. But I put some duct tape across the air inlet of the air filter, or I tape off half the air filter, and then all of a sudden I see different numbers.
Because I know that sensors are capable of sensing changes then.
Yes.
You know, that sounds silly, but it's valid.
It's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Bill from 25th Street Auto, and a good friend of mine for years and years and years, and one of the guys that are on our list, along with lots of other shops. Nevertheless, we talked about Kurt's Auto at I-17 and Bell, down the road from him, and Kurt and Tom are really, really good friends, and that just inspires the heck out of me that we have two shops a mile apart from one another that just... they socialize together. They're friends. Trade customers. Can I get a fresh pair of eyes?
Yep.
Can I bring you a car? Because we are just at a standstill on this car. We need a fresh pair of eyes. So Actions at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him since 1983. And he has ASE certified technicians, and they get the job done right. And Tom is a really good owner, and they understand, and they as the staff understands that Tom is not interested in shenanigans. Just get it in, talk to the customer, diagnose it, bid it correctly, and make sure it leaves repaired and a couple of bucks less than the estimate you gave them. So that's important. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Well, it's 19 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and Bill from 25th Street Autos is sitting here next to me, and we're at your service. And we're going to take Carol first because ladies are first. And, Carol, how can we help you this morning?
Well, I sure hope you can help me because everyone is stumped on the question on my car. I have a 2006 Cadillac STS V6, and it has intermittent electrical problems, such as sometimes it will not even unlock the door and let me in. I have to get my fob out and unlock it, get in the car. When I go to hit the start button, it will not start. If I keep pushing the button, it eventually does start, but it takes several attempts. Sometimes it will say nothing. Sometimes it says no fob detected. And one mechanic did say that his reading was a lost connection.
Okay.
So.
Okay. One of the most important part of this, wherever you decide to take it, is you need to take it there and show them what you're talking about. Show them exactly, and I'll give you a good example, and then Billy's going to follow me up. When you get into the car, I want to know when we push the button to start the car, I want to know if the dash lights up or not. And
it
if
does not.
Okay, all right, and that's really important, and I also want to when you walk up to the car, after you gain access to the car, I want you to do nothing more than just turn on the headlights and see if they shine, and they probably shine at the wall in front of your car or in your garage or whatever. So it no one's going to be able to fix this without your help, and your help is to demonstrate the problem, even if you have to park it at somebody's shop, and then the next morning you say, okay, I'm going to walk up to the car, and I'm going to push this button, and I'm going to have to do it two or three times or whatever your story is. But, Billy, have you ever seen anything like that?
The first thing that came to mind is all of these functions are requiring a proximity device, this little remote thing. And,
yes.
And my first question was, how long has it been since you put a new battery in that remote?
Bingo.
Second thing was, have you tried using your spare key, remote key, and do the symptoms stay the same?
And that's the most important part of this equation right off the bat is you have to answer those two questions.
Okay, I've had the fob. I've changed the battery 3 times.
Okay.
And recently. And, yes, I have tried my other fob as well.
And the problem is there with both of them no matter what, and nothing changes. It's identical. Both of them create the same identical problems.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And it's been in a shop for a couple of days and has never done it to them in the shop.
Okay. Well, I'll give you something that will help you. I want you to park... Every time you park the car, I want you to park it up against something that you can shine the headlights on.
Okay.
So when you go to the grocery store, then pull up behind a big truck that this headlights will shine, or pull up to a parking spot that has something in front of it that you can see the headlights. So the question is do the headlights come on white and bright when it doesn't start? Otherwise, when you try to start it, no noise, nothing happens.
I have not noticed if the lights come on or not, but yeah, there's no nothing. It is dead silent when I try to start it.
Okay. Well, Billy, I have on the web, I have a FAQ 28 that talks to about the headlights. For instance, the headlights are non-existent and no noise with the key. Then intermittently, the headlights are on and everything's okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. You just smiled. Why did you smile?
Well, Mark. What Mark's describing to you is, rather than you leave the car at a shop for several weeks and pay a technician all day, every day to find this problem, he's helping you save money. So because you are going to narrow the list of potential causes. So he's telling you, since it doesn't happen every day, go ahead and use your car, take it to the store. When it happens, if the headlights also don't work, it's what we're going to call a supply voltage problem.
Or
ground.
Yep.
But that's what's required to supply the car with voltage is power and ground connections at the battery.
Bingo.
So, you know, is it a supply problem or is it a communication problem? We don't really know that, but it was a good suspect thing for one of your technicians to say. It sounds like the remote should work. You've got two different ones of them, but nothing happens when you push the button. However, let's not make it too complicated and say, oh, I have to rip the network out of your car, when it could be a loose battery terminal, which happens a lot in GMs.
On either end, I always say the other day, a year ago, a car came in and somebody had they had done intake work on it, and they had moved the ground from a motor mount bolt to the back of the intake. And the bolt was in thread seater, so you could take an ohm meter and you could find a huge resistance value right there.
Yeah.
So if you would go to marksalem.com, do you have access to the internet?
Yes.
Okay, marksalem.com. Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette, and then go to FAQs, and I want you to print out FAQ 28. And what that does is it asks you to turn on the headlights before you do anything, and then tell us what the headlights are doing when it starts and when it doesn't start.
And create that log for your technician to go from there, because the more information you can get them, if you can learn some of the steps, some of the symptoms, some of the key voltage information, it's saving you money when you're paying the technician to take over from there.
And not only that, I remember one lady, and Carol, I have a sister named Carol, and who I love dearly. And I remember that Carol at one time had a blower motor problem. And in her car, and it was intermittent. And of course I said to her, you got two choices. I can start replacing parts and it's going to be kind of expensive, even though you have my last name. But the bottom line is if you just help me. This is what she did. Honest to God.
Right.
She says, when I slam the hood hard, it always works. The blower motor.
Yeah, that's the first thing that comes to my mind.
Or the relay. And so I said, boom, bingo. Yeah. Now, you and I would be smart enough to take, you know those U-Haul, have you ever seen, it's a U-Haul light bulb, and it has a big long pair of leads on it?
Oh, you take the old light bulb out, and it Makes
right.
trailer lights. Yeah.
Right. Well, we use those and we hook them to different circuits on the car and we put them inside the car for the customer. But you're talking about $100 here. But you're going to give them this light and say that light has to come on because it's a crank but no start.
Yep.
So that's on the fuel pump circuit. So yeah. Turn the key on. That light better come on. And if it doesn't, then I want you to turn the key on and off real fast. And I give them this little thing. So you can, we use those all the time. In her case, I'd be wanting to go to the battery and look at the battery. I'd rather
go to start
direct,
there. Yeah.
Yeah, start right at the battery. But anyway, what part of town do you live in?
I live in Mesa.
Okay. You can try Thompson's Auto Repair on Apache Boulevard, east of Stapley.
Thompson's? East Valley. But, you know, now that you're mentioning that, it seems like the problem started after I had a new battery and alternator replaced in my car.
Okay. Everyone will know whose fault it is once we fix it.
Once
we gotta
fix.
We gotta fix it first, but it would
right.
it would be, if you still have a relationship with the shop, it would be a very
uh-huh.
good idea to go in, not on a Monday morning for Friday afternoon for obvious reasons, but to go
right.
back in and say, I've had this intermittent nothing happens problem since you put the battery in. Would you please? I talked to one of my uncles in Pennsylvania who worked on cars all of his life, and he said that maybe we should start at the battery terminals and the battery connections.
Yeah. Please check this to make sure it's okay.
Yes.
No, I'm not accusing anybody.
Yeah.
I know.
But let's start with simple, and I always like to start with potentially free somewhere else,
yeah.
like the guy that worked on your car.
And not only that, let me just ballpark. I'm going to go first. I think if I can duplicate this to find it is going to be, and I'm going to, in the vernacular of an hour or a half an hour to an hour, or I'm going to put it to a dollar value. This, I'm going to be able, if I can find it, the fix is typically going to be a small denomination of the find number. So to find it and fix it, the find's going to cost money, but the fix is probably going to be a connection or something that we can fix for free or not almost free.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
With erratic problems, the finding is usually more than the fixing.
Thank you for
because
that.
Because I refer to diagnosis as the most difficult and costly thing a technician does.
Yeah, no. So all's not lost. You just, and here's the thing, Carol, you need to be involved in this. So if
mm-hmm.
you'll start with that FAQ 28 on my website, it talks to this exact same problem. Billy and I know that if the headlights come on and they go completely out and they come back on slowly, Billy and I know what that is. If they come back real fast, Billy and I know what that is. If the headlights go out completely and then slowly come back on, really yellow, yellow, yellow to white, Billy and I know what that is. If you hit the key and the headlights go completely out and you let go of the key and the headlights come back on immediately, Billy and I know where to go. So do a whole bunch of other guys in the world. But that's what has to happen. So just stick right there. Jay and Gary, I'm sorry I can't get you because I'm 12 seconds away from the top bottom of the hour, but I will in about 3 or 4 minutes. The rest of you, 602-508-0960. But Jay, you're first. Larry, or Gary, you're second, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and just like we promised, we're going straight to Jay and straight to Gary. Jay, you're first. How can we help you?
Good morning, guys. There's a boring old question about a non-sensor. It's the rear hubs on a 09 Ford Taurus.
Okay.
The OEM spindle nut has kind of a cage around it, and those are not available anywhere. The replacement nuts come in a package that says that the threads deform when you put them on. I've not been able to find any specific recommendation to put on new nuts every time you replace the hub. Is there a rule of thumb that you have?
I'm thinking he's talking about the back side of the nut is distorted slightly, so it acts like a lock washer. And so you're actually putting threads in the back side of it when you thread it onto the spindle nut, kind of all the way. Are you?
That's what I'm picturing. And you refer to this replacement nut package, the service kit, as if you have one or have found a listing for one.
Yeah, I found I've seen it in the store. You can actually see the threads are distorted on the back end.
I think you've described that very well. But what I mean is, if it's available, and you're talking about the cost of a hub bearing and the cost of your liabilities of the car driving down the road and the wheel falling off, I'm saying, yeah, put a nut on it.
I mean, how many times are you dealing with this?
Well, it hasn't been done, so I'm just looking at the viability of trying to still locate the old nuts. The original, the OEM nuts are solid. They're not only thicker, but they have real threads on them. There's nothing that's distorted, and there's a cage. It doesn't make any contact with the threads on the spindle. It's just a cage around the nut. I'm not sure what function it performs, and there's no, and it's not the cost of the nuts. It's just putting what's, you know, best for the spindle back on.
Okay, wait a minute. The cage, is this got a cotter pin?
No cotter pin. No, no. It's just torqued to 200 foot pounds.
Well, the cage is not, but the cage slides over the nut, and very often when there is a cage without a cotter pin to go through it, there is a locating key. There's a slot in the spindle, and that's designed to keep the nut from loosening up. In however you do this, we want to keep the nut from loosening up. If the replacement parts are a crush type distorted nut, I'm going to say it's a replacement part for a reason, because they've decided that could be as good or better.
And I wouldn't be, if you're going to buy from a reputable parts store and it comes in a package and it's got a name on it and stuff like that, we got 80 plus years between the two of us, and we're just kind of, this hasn't been on my radar screen in 50 years. You know what I mean? I mean, I understand that you're concerned about losing a wheel and stuff like that. We're going to take the nut, and we've got to seat the nut and squeeze all the grease out of the bearings and stuff. I mean, we got to start there, and then we got to back it off and put it in, and it's kind of a feel kind of thing.
Preload.
Yeah. And so it's just not that big of a deal. If the nut goes on good and tight, I'm not real worried about it coming off. Let me ask you this: when was the last time your car cut towed in with the spindle nut in the cap?
Yeah,
never.
It's been decades.
Decades. Me too. Yeah,
and it's because somebody left something out on the reassembly.
Yes.
If there's a cage, the cage is there to keep the nut from loosening up. So if you put it back together correctly, old parts or new, you ought to be okay. Some cars, and I don't know that application is one of them, some cars ask for new nuts every time. I don't think that one. I think the ones with the cage do not ask for new nuts.
I agree with you. But at the risk of just talking through both sides of my mouth, I'm sure you can find somebody that's going to take that nut off or put it back on, and at least it will give you his opinion on what he thinks is the appropriate thing. Billy, you've been an AASC certified for years?
Yeah, most of my life.
Okay, and master at the master level, and so have I. And we've passed all 8 automotive tests. And so all of them, and one of them covers what we're talking about now. I don't want you to lose a lot of sleep over this. The second thing is go buy a pair of nuts from one of the auto parts stores, and you could even go into 2 of them and say, let me show me the replacement nuts for my Taurus, and you could do that as well. I wonder why they wouldn't have a nut with a nylon lock on the back of it.
It's the easier way around.
Yeah. If you found a nut that had a nylon ring on the back side of it that cuts new threads in the nylon ring, that'd be the dog I'd look for if you were worried about it.
It's easy.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you. Larry, you're up next. How can I help you? Or Gary.
Hi, Mark. Good morning. I had a question. I had a comment, too. You guys were talking about hidden gas caps.
Yeah.
And I just have to tell you, my favorite was the Cadillac. I had a 55 Cadillac way back when, and I loved where it was, you push the button to lift up the tail light.
Yes.
Anyway, that's just a side note, but I was just thinking about that, and when you guys were talking about that, I thought, oh, that's my favorite one. But anyway,
I was thinking of Cadillac too when we were taking Mac.
Yes, yes.
My question actually is, if you're storing a vehicle, you're not going to be driving it for a while. Is there anything in particular that I should do to that if I'm storing it? Do I need to, if I'm not going to be starting it up or driving it for at least 6 months or a year, is there anything that I should think about doing?
Okay, and the answer is yes, but we got to take a break, so you stay right here. Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
And we're going to be right back. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and Gary, you're first, and then Matt second, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and let me talk real quick about a shop that's a good guy. Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services is Automotive Dynamics. Been around since 1982. They have high quality, and they could provide good service, and they have a staff that's been there for a very long time. They've been family-owned and operated since 1982, and I've known Chuck, the owner, since the 60s, and I know his son, Derek. And the two generations complement one another, as my generation is the same, is my kids are better than I am, and Derek's better than Chuck is. So if you're looking for a good auto repair shop, Automotive Dynamics in Sun City is the place I would send you. Let's go back and finish talking with Gary. Gary, we were laughing about the gas cap and being embarrassed as young gasoline jockeys when we were kids, when the old senior guys would tell us to go out and service somebody who had a car that had a hidden gas cap, like the Corvairs and the VWs that had it underneath the hood and stuff like that. So anyway, you had something else, Gary?
Oh, just as far as if you're storing a car, is there anything that you really need to do to it, so you know, if you're not going to be driving it for quite a while.
Yeah, I think go ahead.
A number of things come to mind. One is the gas cap. We find here in Arizona, hydrocarbons tend to evaporate and it leaves sludge. So we'd like to protect the fuel over that length of time. If you can keep the atmosphere, the oxygen away from it, a good sealing gas cap is an important thing. In case it's an old car from the 60s, look at the seal. If it's all full of cracks, replace it. Fuel stabilizer. If I have any of my cars that are going to be sitting for a long time, I don't want the fuel turning into varnish. I use a fuel stabilizer, drive it around a bit, and cross my fingers. The other thing is the battery may try to go dead over time. Whether it's a computer-controlled car or not, it'll eventually go dead, so I like to use a battery tender. I don't leave it on there forever for 6 months or a year for fear it's going to cook the battery. But a lot depends on where you're storing it and for how long. Is it in the shade? Is it somewhere where you have electricity? Or is it in a storage building where you don't have electricity?
Okay, and then I'm going to...
It's actually in the... I'm sorry. Yeah, it is in the garage. And I guess my question, too, on the battery is if you don't care whether or not it goes dead, is it harmful for it to do that? Is a battery tender serve another function other than just keeping it charged?
Well, a lot depends on how old the car is, so we could talk about that in a second, but the average automotive battery is not what they call a deep cycle battery, like for a trolling motor on a boat. It's designed to be run down to next to nothing and recharged. I don't like the idea of deep cycling a battery that is not a deep cycle battery, so I don't want to let it get low.
And there's a couple of other things that I think I want to chime in on. The worst thing you can do if you're going to store a car is have your neighbor go over there and start it up, kick it up on fast idle for about 10 minutes and shut it off. That's the worst thing you can do. As far as a battery tender is concerned, I have lots of experience in that, and I can tell you that you can buy a battery tender that plugs into the wall for $10, and you can also buy a battery tender that plugs into the wall for $200. And there is a difference in sophistication level. I have a battery tender on a big generator at our place up in the hill country or in the mountains. And what it does is I can watch it with a voltmeter, and it will take it when it's in the 12 volt range, and it will start spiking it, and it's got this computer chip in it that spikes it at 15.6 and then comes down to 13.1, and it's playing with the voltage. And at the end of maybe 4 hours, then the green light comes on and I know that we're full. And I would leave my generator connected. Now, once every 4 months, I just run the battery dead. I just run it and crank it and leave the lights on in the generator until it's dead, and then I bring it back alive with the tender. Some guys say that that's a bad idea, but it works for me. So in your case, I would store, the last thing I'd do is have anybody start it full of air, full of fuel, fresh oil, with the negative cable off. That's how I store all my vintage vehicles. And then when I'm going to use them, I'm going to put the negative cable back on, check the air pressure, check the oil, and it's already full of gas and it's got some stable in it. And I'm going to go drive in and I'm going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to put 100 miles. I'm going to do 2 or 3 heat cycles where I take it from cold to hot, fully operational, and back to cold. So I'm going to be doing that because that's what it likes the best. The worst case scenario is have the guy next door come over and start it up for 10 minutes every other Monday. That's going to really not pay any dividends at all. Bill?
How often would
I agree.
You,
use it or don't.
How often I drive it? You can drive it however much you want. You just can't drive it around the block. So if you said to the guy, once a month, he says, I go to see my mother, and I'm in Tempe, and my mother lives at Deer Valley and I-17. Then you say, okay, well, if you want to take my car, take my car.
Yeah.
And take it up to Deer Valley at 17 and bring it back, and that's good. We're going to do 2 heat cycles there.
But if you're going to assign your neighbor to keep an eye on this for you, and he goes over and says he drives it around or says he lets it run for a half hour, and he's really kind of short that day, and it ran for 45 seconds. He's not doing you any favors.
Yeah, that's not what you want. If you're going to take the horse out of the stall, go exercise the horse. Bring him up to run and a full gallop, and then bring him back down to an idle.
Cool it
down. And cool it down and park it. But there's a lot of different ideas, but I have expertise in oil and coolant, and Bill and I both have expertise with respect to fuel injection and stuff like that. It's just a bad idea to run that through a bunch of cold cycles, because we're going to be putting a whole lot of extra gasoline in that motor, and it's going to end up in the oil. And that's just not where you want it. So that's kind of what we would say. But anyway, thank you very much, Gary. Good luck to you. Matt, you're up. How can we help you?
Hey, guys. Speak.
Yeah,
hey,
thank
so
you.
I'm having a high fan relay problem in my AC fan.
Okay.
It's melting the terminal on it. And so my question was whether or not over time AC fans, do they build up resistance? And should I be checking the amperage draw on that fan?
Okay, Billy, don't say nothing. Billy. All right, we got a melted terminal on the high blower motor, a relay.
Right.
Okay. Now, there's only going to be 2 reasons that's burnt. You pick one, I'll get the other.
I'm going to say excessive voltage draw in the blower motor, like the caller was leading towards.
And more than likely, it's a high blower motor. It's a high blower motor relay, so it's running on high. It's where it just takes battery voltage, or the connection or the plug is bad.
Resistance.
Yeah. That's it. So it's only one of those 2 things. That's all there is to it. You're either going to place the remote blower motor. And yes, the amp draw is fine. Hopefully, you have an inductive amp probe where you can wrap it around the wire and read the amp draw. But you can disconnect the wire. But see, my fear is you disconnect the wire, then
you change the resistance.
You change the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the heat at the terminal tells us clearly that the blower motor's overamped or it's got a bad connection right there at that terminal. And if the cheaper way to do it is just go get another relay. Is it a plug? Is it a plastic plug that plugs into the relay?
Yeah, so yes, in terms of that, right, so the relay is melted by, you know, some degrees. You can actually see the burn on the pin.
Okay.
And the plug that it connects to under the dashboard is also somewhat damaged.
Okay.
Yep. By the heat. So is that likely to just continue to then cause a resistance issue over time?
I would say that would be a suspect resistance problem. Your first hope is to ask someone if they make a replacement pigtail where you can replace that, splicing it in properly to the rest of the harness, and remove all the damaged components from your car. After you've fixed the excessive voltage draw problem, because there's no sense in putting new parts on and ruining them.
And there's us older guys have done this before. I remember there was a time when a technician, he was a real good friend of mine too. He just took a 3/8 drill and went right through that loop and brought that wire out and put a pigtail on it, and then he just shoved the relay back in.
Oh yeah, we've had cars where parts are not available, and making a new wire is
piece of cake.
Is easier way around.
It's not a piece of cake. I'm sorry I said that. It's a little bit more difficult than a piece of cake. But yes, we've all done that before. If anything,
the principle is a piece of cake.
Yeah.
the making the cake takes time.
and at the end of the day, this circuit board that you're plugging this relay in, sometimes we just got to bring all those wires out and put new female blade connectors on them and hook it to the relay. And under the best of conditions, we'll somehow give you a drawing and we'll use different colored wires so that you know the green one goes to terminal A and the black one goes to terminal B, because there's no longer this symmetrical kind of connection. But Bill's right too. There could easily be a remote that we plug in to an existing socket and bring it out and remote it. But this is not anything that neither one of these two gray-haired guys haven't done before. So this is not on a
All
one
right,
to
well, oh. I appreciate your time, gentlemen.
Okay, you bet. Thank you. On a 1 to 10
help.
Scale, this is what? On a 1 to 10 scale in your world?
It's a 5 because it's hurt stuff, and we got to fix hurt stuff. But it's certainly not a 10 difficulty.
That's what I'm talking about. I should have
said
that.
Not like putting gas in the car, which is a one.
One, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or trying to convince your father-in-law that the idea of starting his tractor every morning for 3 or 4 minutes and shutting it off is a bad idea.
Very good.
It's just not worth the battle. All righty. 602.
Choose your battle.
Yeah. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are open, and I've got 6 minutes left, so if you were to hurry up, you could get right in, and we could get you down. And Gil, you're going to have to give me the first hour. I'm going to get the second hour because I finally got my readings right. I had a tough time getting in and out, left and right, but I finally have nothing but blue lines on my screen and no big, huge red on the software. So
don't jinx it.
I'm not touching nothing, buddy. I'm not touching nothing. So 602-508-0960. Bill's going to be here with me for another hour, and we're going to be here till 12 noon. So if you have a car question, and we're really, really good at solving arguments. Oh, we
oh,
can
I like
solve
that.
Arguments all day long. Just don't be too prim and proper about, would you tell my wife she's not blah, 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 because sometimes the gentleman or the spouse, the spouse is wrong. And so that's the ones that Bill handles. When it's time to be a hero, then I'll handle
then
the rest of them. And there's just lots of that kind of stuff, old wives' tales. I am an advocate of running tire pressures on my truck at maximum inflation on the tire.
Right.
I understand that the sticker says this is what the tire should have to carry the maximum load. Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of riding a bicycle with fully inflated tires.
Oh, yeah.
I just like that.
And it's the same benefit on a bicycle, rolling resistance, as it is in your car. And you'd like to lower the heat of the tire. Mm-hmm. You'd like to get better gas mileage. Why would you want to underinflate the tire like the sticker tells you to do?
Okay, that's you did a nice job. You cleaned that up nicely. But Bill, if you do that, you're going to wear the center right out of those tires.
Actually, no.
You're right. I agree with you.
The sidewall of a radial tire is soft enough where the whole tire is going to touch the ground, and then you're likely to drive around a corner, which is going to flex the rest of the tire into a significant contact with the asphalt.
And if I'm driving down the road at 70 miles an hour and I hit a pothole, I'd much rather hit the pothole with a fully inflated tire than a tire that's half inflated. That's going to the tire's going to hit the wheel. It's going to blow the tire out. And then my wife's going to spill her beer. And we're going to end off the side of the road. And I'm not going to change the tire because she shouldn't be drinking when she's driving. All that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? All that stuff. So this is the analogy I use. When you got your bicycle at the beginning of the summer, you got on your bicycle when you were a kid. and the tires were half flat, and you rode it to the closest Exxon or Shell station,
and you drove across the hoses and it went ding ding.
Yes. But it took tremendous effort to get there. But then when you got there, you aired those son of guns up, and boy, that bike just went. It was like a Corvette at that point.
And easier.
Oh yeah, and it was just so much easier to ride it. Well, that's the way the car is.
Yep, don't overwork your car.
Yeah, and so cars, your fuel economy is going to like it better. If there's a change in the ride, it might be a little harsher, but I don't really care. I drive a one-ton Dodge, and it really, and I didn't buy it to drink. I didn't buy it to put a hot cup of coffee between my legs and wait until it spills.
And assume it's
It's not going to spill. So the bottom line is I just run them on virtually everything.
You get used to driving with the proper inflation in your tires eventually.
Yeah. As we get older, we get wiser, you know.
Tell ourselves that.
Our wives tell us.
It gives us radio shows.
Yeah, and my wife says it doesn't work for me. She says you're just way past help here, way past help. 602-508-0960. We have another hour to go. You might have to wait through the break, and if that's the case, you're going to be on hold for about 3, 4, 5 minutes at the most, and we'll pick you up right first, second, and third as we get done. We have five lines. Gil's the one that's on the board, and so he actually is the fly in the plane. Bill and I are in the first class section. He's got his shorts on. He's got white socks, black tennis shoes. My feet are up on the table. And we're really just doing nothing but having fun. This reminds me of two little boys inside of a closet talking dirty. You know? And this is the picture we want to give you with respect to what it looks like to be us. But anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And my name is Mark Salem. This is Bill from 25th Street Auto, 25th Street and Indian School. Been my friend for years and years. Does a good job, and he knows right from wrong. That's the reason why anybody in that area I typically send to Bill at 25th Street Auto. Well, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, or however you want to say it. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open. We have five lines. Billy from 25th Street Auto, 25th Street and Indian School, a shop that I refer to on a regular basis because he can fix cars, and he does a good job. Those are the important considerations. So he's sitting here next to me. Together, we probably have somewhere in the vicinity of 60 to 70 years of experience between the two of us.
At least,
yeah. So, and we're both ASC Master Certified Technicians, and that just says that we've been certified and we're qualified to work on cars, and that we've tested appropriately every 2 years, I think it is, where you have to test until you get to the emeritus level, and then you don't have to test. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. I did that this year.
Very good.
Yeah, if you call yourself retired and you're no longer working, then you continue to hold the title of ASC Master Technician without testing every 2 years.
Huh.
So it's kind of like a professor at the ASU. Emeritus means retired.
Yeah.
And so, although I don't think they check your fingernails, because if they did, then
they might know you worked on a car.
They probably know I work on a car.
You're maybe not retired.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's okay with me. 602-508-0960. We had lots of interesting car calls, and like we have one right now. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be George.
George, good morning. You hit it just right at the right time, buddy.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, George. Hey.
Well, thanks for taking my call. Great, great show. I really enjoy it a lot. A lot of great information. And so I drive a 2010 Ford Ranger pickup truck, low miles, 39,000 miles. One thing I've noticed is that when you look at it from the back end, the left side sits a little bit lower than the right side. And I've been trying to figure out what would cause that. I wouldn't think just a bad shock would cause something like that. Do you guys have any idea what might be the solution?
Okay, the shock has nothing to do with the right height of the car. Nothing. So,
I didn't think so.
You're right.
And this is a touchy situation because Billy and I both have the same question on our mind. The Ranger's a small truck. And so with all due respect, is the people that normally drive the Ranger at the approximate load that the government tells them to be at. And let me preface that by saying the guy that sits in the seat of my truck is heavier than what the truck is supposed to be designed for. So it the only thing that would cause that sag is the driver, because your truck doesn't exactly have a 3/4 ton or 1 ton suspension. And if we're sagging, it's nothing to do with the shocks, because the shocks have nothing to do with what we call ride height. And so in your particular case, you're going to probably have coils on the front and coils on the back.
Or a leaf on the back.
A leaf on the back, maybe.
Honestly, well, I'm driving right now, so I'm not sure if it's actually, I think it's a leaf spring on the back rather than a coil.
I think
pretty sure.
Billy says the same thing. So coil on the front, leaf on the back. There's a lot of people that will ask us to, they don't want to buy a coil, so they just say, well, will you just pop swap the front ones? So put the weak one on the passenger side and put the one that's not had a whole lot of potato sitting on top of it on the driver's side. So that's something. But there's really no other adjustment. I guess we could put a small spring saddle in there to raise it up a half an inch to level it out, and which is nothing more than a piece of rubber at the bottom of the spring.
To get back to your original question, yes, you're right. Shock absorbers are designed to dampen jounce and rebound, the up and down movement. The vehicle, the ride height is the springs. What can cause it to be crooked is very likely to be years worth of one person in the car causes the left car to be a little lower. It's a real common thing, like Mark said. Absent things like it's been in a wreck and the frame's bent, or it's been in a wreck and the pickup box is actually mounted on there crooked, it makes it look like the car's crooked when it isn't.
Yep.
Absent things like that, then I'm going to say something's going away. And it could be, like Mark said, age because of left-to-right differences, or it can be parts go bad. You can have a spring that, you know, is de-arching at a different rate than the other spring. It can also be, you know, because I keep thinking it's the left rear that we have the question with. It could also be, if you had a table or a chair with four legs and it rocks, one leg's off the ground, you know, do you have one leg too tall or do you have one leg too short? And if it rocks from the left rear to the right front, is it because the left rear leg is too short or the right front leg is too short? You have to get out there and measure the car, you know, on level ground, and measure all the corners and find out, is it the left rear of the car or is it the right front of the car causing these problems? We don't really know.
And you can pick any portion of the car to measure as long as you use the same point from left to right.
Yep.
So, you know, you just you can go 18 inches behind the headlights on the crack between the hood and the fender, put your chalk mark there, and measure from there and there and there and there. Just do it. Make sure you stay the same continuity. But I bet you find out that the truck in the rested position is going to be different than the truck with the driver sitting in it. And that's probably going to magnify the issue in your head. You'll know right then that. But the fix on that is no real big deal, especially if you say, "Hey, Mark, I've got 3/8 of an inch to a half an inch side to side variation on a truck that's 21 years old. Even with 39,000 miles, it's still been standing on all four legs for 21 years for 11 years.
No, it's 11 years old. It's a 2010.
Oh, okay. So, all right.
Okay.
No. All right.
But it sounds like maybe we're dealing then with possibly a weak spring on that side, or maybe the right front is a little higher than it should be. So I need to just get out and measure, and that's going to kind of help me zero in on more where the actual problem is.
Yeah. If the left rear is too low, it can be that spring is too low. It could also be that the right rear is actually too high because the left front of the car is too low.
Yeah.
As a drag racer, I've done some suspension work in my life.
So if you raise up the right rear, it's going to collapse the left rear because the left rear is softer. So if you raise up the left rear, that's why I said you just make your marks all the way around the truck and just kind of do a measurement.
And if we're talking about a half inch, then don't touch it. If it's an inch and a half, I might want to look into it.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And, you know, cheaper than buying a matched set of springs or a matched set of all four-corner springs, they do make shims where you can shim underneath a leaf spring or you can shim underneath a coil spring. I don't recommend you get anywhere near a coil spring. There's a lot of dangerous energy stored in those things.
Yeah.
And
most of the time we end up bending equipment trying to get those things in and out anyway. So the spring compressors are not the strongest vest
or,
in the world.
Or bending appendages.
Yes, yes. Okay, George.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Right, you bet. That's an interesting question. It's really tough to answer that question when it's a lady answering the question. And then you say, yeah, how many people drive this?
How much
nobody
do you
but
weigh?
Me. you got to go, how much do you weigh? But that's not what we're going to do. All right. We've got another caller. And who might that be?
I say hello to Larry.
Larry, good morning, buddy.
Good morning. Maybe you could help me. I have a 2002 Ford Thunderbird, and I'm getting a light on my instrument panel telling me there's something the matter with the airbag system.
Okay.
It flashes when I first start up the car, and after I drive, it stays on constantly.
How many miles are on that Thunderbird?
35,000.
Okay. The computer has lost sight of the airbag that sits in the steering column. And because one half of that circuit is stationary that's present in the steering column, as you can imagine, the other half of that circuit has to rotate with the steering wheel. Okay?
Right.
So we got a steering wheel that's moving that has to keep attached to the wire that's stationary. And in the middle of all of that is called the clock spring.
Or that's what we call it.
We call it.
Because it looks like a clock spring.
And so this isn't a tough thing to do, but I can tell you this much, and you can take this to the bank. When the light is on, you don't have airbags in that car.
Right.
It's not going to pop airbags in your face. So it's not that tough. Now, here's how you can help us. I want you to take your hands, and I want you to position them kind of 12 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And I want you to kind of push and pull and twist the doggone steering wheel. And can you find the spot where you can actually make the light go on and off? Now, if you do that, Billy, he comes into you and he says that, come here, Bill, I can show you how to make this go on and off. How much diagnostic money has he saved?
I'm going to say he's 99% certain that we don't have to, and based on his assistant, we can assume it's the clock spring's fault.
Bingo. If you just kind of work with us on this.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. This is what it's going to sound. Larry?
Okay.
I think it's the clock spring, but I'm a little worried about the small amount of mileage that you have on this. But again, it's, you know, the doggone truck is what, 19, 20, 21 years old, whatever it is. I'm not going to do the math right now. So the clock spring is the most common problem that we have this for. And so you need to know that I'm going to sell it to you as I think this is what it is, but it's going to cost you X amount of dollars, a couple of hundred dollars to dig the clock spring out and put a new one in. And there is a possibility it won't work. And it's because we haven't really narrowed down what makes it go on and go off.
We haven't proven it. Yeah.
And we need your help. Now, we can take the clock spring out. Sometimes you can see the problem and sometimes you can't, but we're not going to take the steering wheel off and take that tilt wheel apart, and we're not going to do all that work if we're not going to leave a new one in there.
Yep.
I mean, we're not going to go do all that work and then leave your old one in there. So, when they come in with airbags.
We hope we can find one for 2002.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. And if we can't, then what we're going to do is you're going to have this big coil spring over by your ashtray. And we're going to use that. No.
What's going to be is if I don't do anything, so the airbag system is not working.
Yep.
Is that going to be a problem for the car?
No, that's going to be a problem for you or your wife or your kids or your family if you have a frontal crash, because your head's going into the steering wheel and into the dashboard and into the windshield, when I think the big air pillow is a lot better idea, even on a gamble. If you were my customer, I would say to you, Larry, we can't get it to happen, but you only have two choices. Wait till it gets worse and easier to find, or make an educated guess. And the educated guess is I think it's going to be the clock spring. That's really the only end that we worry about. The only other thing it could be is the airbag, but really and truly the airbag is 1 out of 100 and the clock spring is 95 out of 100. So,
The other things, the weight sensor, the proximity sensors in the front of the car, these things are like 0.005 out of 100.
That's right.
So, marks right on target.
Yeah. If I had to bet, I'd bet it's the clock spring. And if you want an educated bet, then we're both going to say the same thing. So, good luck, Larry. Thank you very much. You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have open lines available. There's five of them, and we will dispatch you and put you into the front of the line as soon as Gil answers the call, and he's the one that says, KKNT, how can I help you, or something similar to that, and you can say, is your game name Gil, and he says yes, and you say, when did you get out of prison, Gil, and he'll tell you. And then he'll take your name and phone number, and we'll put you in line. 602-508-0960.
All righty.
21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have four lines available. Nacho's got one of them, so you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. You got a car question? 602-508-0960. Billy from 25th Street Auto. He's at Indian School in 25th Street. Somebody I refer the Central Phoenix people to on a regular basis, and he's a good shop, and he knows how to fix cars. But Nacho, you have our full attention. What can we do for you today?
Hi, guys. I have a 2013 Chevy Traverse that in the beginning of March, when it was still kind of cool outside, when you idle, the temperature gauge would rise up, and then when you start to drive again, it would go down. And then when it got hot, some of the plastic heater hoses in the back of the engine burst. So I had those replaced, and then I still had the same problem, temperature rising when idling, and I don't know what else it could be. Okay. I take it to the shop.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to know, where on the gauge are we talking about? Is this range start at half and go to three quarters? Does it start at a quarter and go to half? Does it go from three quarters to red? Where is the range that you're talking about?
Okay, so it starts at half and it goes about to three quarters.
Okay. I'm not real worried about that.
Yeah, three quarters isn't real alarming. Uh-huh. Now, since you had an issue where heater hoses blew, you know, a catastrophic coolant loss like that can cause internal engine damage. It probably didn't, because you're not describing, I'm driving on the freeway and the temperature gauge pegs. So I think it's pretty safe to say your engine's okay, but something's not quite right. Since you're describing something that preliminary happens at stops, engine speed is a little lower there, but mostly airflow is lower there. The last GM product I had that had that very same system had two electric cooling fans. One of the cooling fans would just occasionally not work. It took us overnight to catch it acting up, because we checked it and the fans worked, and we checked it, two of us, and they checked it and the fans worked. But the next day, one cooling fan stopped working. And with one cooling fan working in 118 degrees, which is 160 in the asphalt, your car can get warm.
On top of that, you can take a pair of clothespins and some business cards and put them on those fans, and you can go make all the noise you want. In the real world, that doesn't bother me. And we don't know what the ambient temperature was at the time, how long the car had been on the road. If you had the air conditioning on, maybe the second fan is keyed from the air conditioning system and the one fan is with no AC. We don't know all that kind of stuff. But it's pretty clear to me, and I'm going to agree 100% with you. We don't have a blown head gasket. We don't have any engine damage, because we don't have the symptoms that go along with that. Mm-hmm. So all we've got is we've got a change in the temperature. He could have an air bubble because of this. Because the system now has an air bubble that hasn't worked its way out yet.
Purged, yep.
So there's a lot of things that could be done. I would, if I were you, I'd make sure that in the morning, squeeze the upper hose, and if it's nice and soft and pliable, take the radiator cap off and make sure that it's full right there. And then I'd look at the overflow jug and make sure that it was half full.
Good advice.
And then I would continue to drive it. If everything is okay and there's an explanation that you're coming to a stop, the ambient temperature is up to 117, 118, or whatever the heck it is, the ambient temperature off the pavement's 150, then all of a sudden it goes to three quarters. I'm not worried about that. I don't know where I'd spend the money to fix it. I don't know what we do. So that's kind of our answer. I'm not quite sure. And especially in light of the last 30 days of temperatures that we've had.
Higher than normal.
Yeah, higher. Gosh, you lift the hood, and if you have your St. Jude cross on and you bend over, and then all of a sudden you stand up, and that thing brands you because it gathered heat off the motor.
Off the engine.
Nobody wears necklaces anymore with crosses because they burn you. So, Nacho, I'm betting that if you're worried about engine damage, I'd say the chances if you have an engine damage are about the same as me being president in the next election cycle.
All right, well, thanks for your help.
Okay, good luck. Thanks. Runs half to three quarter. Okay, question mark. That way I always remember. Okay, and we have another caller already. And who might that be, Mr. Gill?
That would be Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Hey, Mark. How's it going? You recommended a clock spring to me at one point. I took it to my shop, and they threw their magic box on it. You know, that $8,000 box, not one at the cheapy stores.
Mm-hmm.
And he reset it, and I got about another year before it came on, and then I had to buy one.
Yeah.
So that's something the guy could try. Hey, for $10, give the guy $10 for lunch. And also, whenever your car gets in the red, no matter who you are, shut it off.
Yeah. Now, let's go back to, though. So you had an airbag light, which is a red light. You had a mm-hmm. red light on, and you took it, and he hooked up some magic gizmo.
No. The thing that you guys have that's like $8,000 from.
Okay.
And I don't know what you call.
Did he just clear the code and start?
Yeah, he cleared the code.
Okay.
And turned the key, and magically it stopped flashing.
Okay. Well, it's gonna stop flashing until it sees the fault again. So, and the only time it's going to see the fault again is when you turn the steering wheel all the way to the right or all the way to the left, when you kind of do a complete sweep with it, you know, making a 90-degree left turn or right turn. What I want to avoid is, Bill, is I want people to think, okay, well, I've got an airbag light on, and I'm going to take it over, and somebody's going to plug something in and push a button, and it's going to go away for 9 months, because that's really not what...
No.
Yeah.
No, I was just lucky in that case because
yeah.
I didn't have the money at the time because I'm disabled.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Eventually I had to do it, you know. And the thing is, being broken, disabled, and I get in an accident, I'm going to be 10 times more broken.
Yeah, I think everything you said, I agree with it 100%. You know, Billy, my wife's had an airbag light on for the last
two minutes.
We've been married 47 years or 57 years or 140 years, and her light's been on, and she keeps complaining about it, Bill.
Maybe it's an airhead light because she's married to you.
And it still passes emissions. You don't need a
yes, it will. It will still pass emissions.
Right. Yep.
It doesn't have to be safe to pass emissions.
Right. Gil said yours is a 666 burned in your chest, Mark.
Listen. If you're not a little ornery, you're not really walking the boundaries of life. Life is just a big road with electric fences on both sides, and I like to bounce off the fences every once in a while. And most everybody that knows me knows I'm kidding. I love my wife. We've been married for 100 years or more, and it is just something funny to say after we've said you can't drive with your airbag light on, and then to say, oh yeah, my wife said, and I own an auto repair shop and my wife's got that light on.
She gets quite the discount.
Anyway, all right, Chris, thank you very much. Oh, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Now, just to write this down, listen to this. I'm writing it down
next to
Chris's name. Air bag, and then I'm going to put .. light. So, I mean, airbag all by itself connotates all kinds of trouble problems for Mark. And so right now, Gil is saying, the engineer at the station is saying, shut the hell up and go to break. He's saying to me, 15 seconds. Oh, now it's 10 seconds away, and Mark won't get into any more trouble. So I'll just count it down for you. It's Bill and Mark, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Mark Salem, Bill here from 25th Street Auto, 25th Street and Indian School, Central Phoenix, handles those people. But let me tell you about a couple of shops real quick. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, Nate. Oh, man. When you meet Nate, first of all, he's taller than the Corn King Giant. Number two, he has 10 hands like tennis rackets. And number three, you'll look at him and know that if you were in a bar fight, you'd want him on your side. But he's the kindest man you've ever met in your life, and he knows Dodges and Chevys and Ford diesels, and that's why it's called Strictly Diesel. So he's been around since 1982. I've known Nate for more than 20 years, and he's really, really good at what he's done. So he's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He's open Monday through Friday. Sells parts 24 hours a day on their website. And it's a good shop if you're a diesel guy. And by the way, I just misspoke. He's not been out and about since 1982, but I have known him for 20 years. I was looking at the wrong line. Nevertheless, we also want to talk about automatic transmission exchange. Now, these are a couple old guys. Phil's been around since 1968. He knew Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. That's how old Phil is. He started out when automatic transmissions were Power Glides and the other ones, which are like 150 years ago. But the fundamentals are the same. We're going to make the gears change with pressure, transmission fluid pressure, electronics, vacuum, throttle control, and we still do that today. We just do it in different ways. So if you're looking for a transmission shop, the only one I can recommend to you is Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, and been around since 1968. And let's go to JR. JR, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good afternoon. Good morning. Yeah. I'm checking on something. My sister's got an old 99 Dodge Chrysler minivan, and the hood release mechanism, I pull the cable, of course, nothing releases up front, so it possibly failed on that end, the cable, and or it's, you know, misaligned or broken or something where I can't release that hood latch. Now, I look trying to figure out how in the heck you can get that release on this 99 to disconnect, but is there a way that you guys know how to get a bar or something through the front, or do you have to go through the very bottom in between the air conditioning cooler and radiator, or what is the method to release that latch up there on the front?
No problem. Yeah, bring it by Billy's shop, and he's going to use a coffee can as a template, and he's going to cut a big hole right there on the hood for you, and then he'll reach in and fix your cable. And that's just $35 minimum charge?
Oh, it would be so fun. I'll just donate the fee okay. to cut a hole in his hood.
Okay. The other way, I thought, was take off the front wheels and have to pull out the linings and the wheel wells there and go up that way.
Yep, and then there's another piece of metal I can cut a hole in once I get your tire off.
Exactly. We can get there. All right. I want to change the question. Getting this hood open on a 1 to 10 scale difficulty scale. What is it?
10. I think it's a 10.
No. Okay, 10. We know you think it's a 10. I'm asking Billy. He's got gray hair. He's got grease on his fingernails.
As I look through the plastic grill, and I can't really remember a caravan very well, I'm thinking they try to make it to where you can't just stick in a screwdriver and steal your battery. I'm thinking they're trying to make it difficult, but every car has a way.
I'm going to say that there is a way the multitude of specialty tools that our technicians have in a box, coming from this piece of brass that's got a curly Q pig's tail on the end of
that
John has got, and you just go in there and grab a hold of that cable and pull on it and unlatch it. This isn't a big deal. This is a 2 or a 3 or a 4 at most. We might have to take the grill apart. We might have to take one of the horizontal flaps off the grill so that we can get past that area, but this isn't a big deal. This just really isn't a big deal. But I can't tell you how to do it, but all you got to do is follow the cable.
Every model's different.
Yeah. So you follow the cable, and when you get there, that latch is going to... Oh, and then another thing.
2 minutes.
When you've got the cable on some long pair of needle-nose pliers or something like that, when you got the cable, you want to have somebody pushing down gently on the hood because you're going to unload the latch.
Release
that way,
stress.
When you pull... Yeah, thank you.
It'll be easier.
You're releasing the stress of the spring pushing on the hood. So by just gently pushing and just gently kind of bouncing it, you'll go poop, and all of a sudden it'll open up, and you'll be a hero.
1 minute.
Yeah, I've been trying it in both cases. Just like I said, I pulled that cable back in the car and nothing, there's no sound, no release, but the cable is still attached with tension. But that's why I think it must have disconnected up there on the latch side.
Well, if that's the case, you'd be able to pull the cable all the way through if it came through. There's
most likely, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I think what you need to do is pull it from the latch side and have somebody underneath there with a flashlight to look to see what's moving on the front side.
Have you had somebody, okay, while pulling on the handle, kind of tapping on the hood a little bit? Because if something's sticky, sometimes you just go tap, tap, and it goes blink, and it pops up
right
an inch or two.
I'll try that. honestly haven't tried that. I didn't think it was possible to get that easy. But
and you're probably not fast enough to pull the cable and run around to the front by yourself.
That's when you have your wife and you say, honey, I'm going to say pull and here and put your hand over hers and you pull her hand and show her how to pull so she doesn't break the lever because she doesn't want to put both feet against the dashboard and start pulling on the lever. And you go out there and kind of bounce the hood. And then when it opens, let me just give you some advice, JR. You sound like you're same age as Billy and I, but when it pops, you praise the hell out of her and tell her what a great assistant
she, did a great
she
job.
Is. Yeah. And don't take the credit.
Absolutely. One other quick question. I got a 2014 Frontier and transmission oil. Is it better to just go get a actually Nissan product, or is there like Walmart's or somebody's or AutoZone, anybody's transmission oil to put in that 2014.
Bill,
what's your recommendation?
You want that first?
Yeah, I'm real picky about using the exact oil specification. Don't care whose name is on it, not necessarily Nissan, but are you going to find an NV specification synthetic fluid at Walmart? You may find that you end up at Nissan buying it, because then you're certain that it's the correct application. Different transmissions require different fluids, and whatever specification it calls for, use that fluid.
Let me dovetail on it. You can decide if I'm nice,
if it's
or,
nice
not.
Or not.
There's no such thing as a factory that pours oil in a Nissan can. That's made from one of four companies that makes oil.
Yep.
Chevron, Mobil, Exxon, Phillips 66. Okay? So it's out there and it's available. And a lot of them have a generic blend and they have stuff that you can use. Amber is a one that is used in about 85% of the cars. So you'll find a transmission fluid that's amber colored, and that color tells us that it's a universal. And it's something that you can use. But if you want to use Nissan, that knock yourself out. But I think if you get on the internet or if you go to the local auto parts store, you'll probably find he's going to look it up and find out the specific name of the fluid. And then he'll say, that one right over there has the same product. So that's what I do.
Okay.
Got to run. Thank you, JR. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Every Saturday, I'm here from 10 to noon talking about car and car repair questions and problems. Monday through Friday, if you want to get a hold of me, it's easy. Mark@marksalem.com. Mark@marksalem. Salem like the cigarette, .com. And you're welcome. And if you'll give me a phone number, I probably am going to call you because I'm going to have questions. And it's more efficient if I just call you. It'll be a block number, and if you don't answer, I'm going to tell you. This is Mark Salem. I'm calling you about your car question. I'll call you back in 10 minutes or something like that. So we'll just work through that, but obviously I can't have my cell phone number out there on the internet. Otherwise, my wife would divorce me and probably shoot me and tell me that I have too many mistresses that are calling me, and I'm disguising the conversation as a car repair question. And so that's how she does that, and that's the way it is. Let's go to Don. Don, good morning. How can we help you?
I was trying to figure out how to change the nut behind the steering wheel.
Well, in your case, you take the nut off, throw it out the window, and just hold on to the steering wheel tight.
I do have a serious question.
Okay.
Is up north, is everything okay?
You know, I'm proud to tell you that the communities up north that I am within vision of and interact. I'll give you a good example. Obviously, Renee and I were actually on our way to Pine and Strawberry to evacuate some of her stuff there that's in storage facilities, and we got caught in the return back home. I could have walked from Pine to Payson faster than the traffic was going. Nobody's fault. But I'll tell you, like yesterday, I have a really good friend. I have lots of friends. Believe it or not, I have a lot of friends. But in Payson, there's a bunch of military guys from Army and Marines, and then there's a bunch of retired policemen, law enforcement guys. But one of the guys, Daryl Floyd, he's in the search and rescue group. I said, I didn't see you yesterday. You didn't answer my call. He goes, well, I was in Pine doing 360s. And I go, what are you doing? What does that mean? He goes, well, the entire search and rescue group went to Pine and Strawberry and walked around every single house 360 degrees and shook all the windows and doors to make sure everything was okay, and then nothing was running out of the doors like water or anything like that. And I said, that is the nicest thing. That is just shows the small town
that
community.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's what they did. He says we 360'd every single
building
that was in Pine and Strawberry.
Wow.
Now, I may have misrepresented something there, but I'm pretty sure that's what
general.
He said.
Yeah.
And I talked to him this morning because I had to come and be with you today, so he was going to feed the horses. And I said, "Are you're up kind of early?" And he goes, "I went to bed kind of early." But you know, Don, it's really, everybody's kind of stuck together. We had people step up for the people with horses, and they opened up the fairgrounds, so to speak, in Payson. And then there's lots of people that opened their doors for people that were stranded that couldn't get back home and had no place else to go. So it really did bring the community together well, and I'm proud to be a part of that community.
Absolutely.
So
good folks.
And so have you quit drinking, and does your wife like you any better than she did yesterday?
Oh, well, with her dementia, it's, who are you? why are you here? And get your butt out and run more calls.
We
I
hear
need the
her.
Money somehow, you know.
We can hear her, Don.
That's my daughter.
Oh, okay. All right. She's sticking up for her mother.
They got the whip, you know. It's like, you know how that goes.
All right. Well, you had a question somewhere along the line. I'm all ears.
Well, I was just wondering if everything was cool up north.
Oh,
didn't lose
really
anything.
Nice of you.
I was going to call the shop, and I started going down the road, and I'm going, I got to call the shop and see if Mark's okay, and then I just accidentally blew it off because something else came up, and you know the scenario.
No, I appreciate that. I did have some calls from people that loved me. There's only a couple of them, and we're in an area that we haven't been affected by anything other than the smoke, and so we're blessed in that respect. But by the same token, like everybody else around us, we have our real valuable stuff already locked in the cars and the trucks, and we know when they say ready, set, go, when they say go, we're gone, and we'll let the Lord handle the rest of it. So,
really?
But anyway, thank you very much.
Everybody's safe.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you.
All righty. It is kind of nice. I really do like to spend time up there because it's a small community, and people are really nice to one another. And the worst thing that happens in a small community is the politics. and I stay out of that because I don't care. And most everybody else does too. But as in all small towns, you've got the mayor and the council, and you've got the board of supervisors for the county and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, no, not even by and large, all the people that I've met that have held decision-making political decisions, I've liked and I would trust to make that decision. I've not met a wacko yet.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I won't. That doesn't mean there's not one.
Keep
there. Or it could be that I'm the wacko. You know what I mean? One way or the other. So who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Steve.
Steve, good morning. How can we help you today?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I kind of wanted to give a shout-out to a Tempe shop. And let me go through the scenario first, then I'll mention it.
No, we don't do that. We don't do that.
Oh,
it's okay. Here's what I'm up against. Now you stay right there, because we're going to talk about this. There are times where this conversation turns out to be a 2 or 3 minute free commercial for a shop, but let me just ask you a couple of questions, okay? Is this a shop that you've done business with regularly, or was it a first time visit?
Yes.
Okay.
Regular.
Okay. And was it a shop that you had an ongoing problem that they were able to fix?
Never.
Okay. So they've never fixed a shop or fixed an ongoing problem?
I've never had an ongoing problem that they couldn't fix.
Okay. Okay,
it's
fair
always,
enough.
It's always they've done a great job. And now with how we've laid this out, I think everybody's going to think that I'm related to you, and I'm not. Am I related to your son Alan? But I have a problem with diesel shops or non-diesel shops that try to work on diesels, and I just have to say, and I get upset with shops both dealers and mom and pops when I go in for something very simple, let's say lube oil and filter, and I get a grocery punch list of you need to do these things, or I don't think that poor Dooley's going to get off the service drive.
Okay.
And
I know where this is going.
No, I don't think you do. I don't think you do because
okay.
I call for an appointment because I know, because of some other inspections, that I need rear brakes on my Dooley, my 2012 Ram 3500. And I know that I want pads and I want new rotors.
Okay.
The thing that I appreciate about this shop is the technician knows what he has to do, but in some other inspections of the vehicle, I have a bad serpentine belt and tensioner. And when it comes back to me and after the truck was looked at, you know, those were the only things that I needed was I have some hot spots on the rotors on the front. And I'm one of your frequent callers because I have about a 14,000 pound fifth wheel that I used to tow with a Ford, and now I'm with the 6.7 Cummins.
Okay.
And I like the situation when I have a tech that says, Steve, this is something that could affect you on the way home. We need to look at it now. This can wait till next oil change. This can wait about 3 months.
Okay.
Not of something I have to do all at once. And that's why, and again, I'm not related to you, Renee, or Alan, or you, any of your next door neighbors, but I come all the way from Joy Ranch Road on 26th Street in Cave Creek to Salem Boys Performance Diesel on Warner. And the reason I do it really isn't for the upfront guys, but it's more for how Alan and probably you train the guys in the back. The back guys are treating this truck like it was theirs and going for the immediate repair and something that could bite me in the ass on the way home.
Okay.
So I especially want to give a shout out to Sean, who had taken such great care, and why I come from, I can't find another shop for me to quit coming to Tempe for my diesel.
Okay. All right, let me just do some explaining. He's obviously talking about my son Alan. He's obviously talking about our shop, and that's very nice. And here's kind of why thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. And I'll tell you, I am the one that made the decision that we are going to allow our technicians to interface and communicate with our customers. We have to draw the line because sometimes we have guys that will walk out there and start picking the rocks out of the tires of their tires and dominate that time. So we have a way to handle that. My guys do a really good job, and I think it's in the best interest for the customer and the technician to talk, and then there to be some show and tell. And you described perfect examples of why I'm really proud of the guys. I was just kind of worried that we were going to go in a different direction, and then all of a sudden I kind of realized that it was probably going to have my last name attached to this somewhere down the line. But thank you for that. I honestly do appreciate that you do that, but I'm learning from a lot of other shops in town, and everything that we do good, I've copied from somebody else. And so I really like the idea that I'm just kind of one of those people that not a lot of the stuff is original, but a lot of it is stolen. And I know that the diesel guys just want to be able to walk through that stupid door that with permission, they walk into the shop, usually with the service rider, and have a conversation with the technician. I know that's important, and that's why we allow it. And to be perfectly honest with
you,
the women are ones that we really want to take back there, and then my daughter Andy does that. And so she'll take the lady back, and then we'll be prepared to say, here's a new fan belt, here's your belt, this is why we think you should do it. And this is the one, and look, they're both the same size, and this is on your car still, and on and on and on. So I think there's lots of shops that do what we do, and you'll find them at marksalem.com, and there's a list of the best car repair shops in the valley according to Mark Salem, and you'll find those kinds of good things to all of them. It's just that I happen to be blessed with a microphone and I get to talk about it. But another thing is I don't say the name of my shop because this isn't about my shop. It's about you, the callers, and your problems. So thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. And I'm sure when I cut this out, Alan will know exactly who the heck you are. And thank you for spending your Saturday with me.
I enjoyed helping out.
Bill from 25th Street Auto, 25th and Indian School. If you live in Central Phoenix, he should be your guy.